Happy New Year and welcome back to Three Lessons from Breakthrough Leaders. I'm Zana Ryabchuk, MD at Breakthrough Global.
And I'm Dr. Bart Sale, Breakthrough CEO and founder. We've spent 30 years developing the Breakthrough methodology to transform companies who want to reach the highest level.
And in this podcast, we'll get to the heart of that transformation, meeting leaders and creative talents to share three lessons that we guarantee will help you and your companies to unleash your potential. And Bart and I will take a moment to analyse the key takeaways and opportunities for breakthrough thinking. In today's episode, we'll hear from Paul Chibe, who's the CEO of Pabst Brewing Company. At the time of recording, Paul was president and CEO of Ferrero North America at Ferrero Group, where we've worked. Before that, he was the US Chief Marketing Officer at AB InBev, where his key achievements included creating the large-scale Budweiser Made in America concert series with Jay-Z and launching the Bud Light Platinum and Rita brands. Previously, Paul spent 11 years working with the Wrigley Company, where he also worked with Breakthrough. Today, we'll be learning these three lessons from Paul. How transformational change requires courage and resilience.
One of the things that happens in a mindset at an organization that has a resistance to change is that people will feel like the status quo is great or acceptable, instead of understanding that the status quo is something that has to move, it has to evolve, it has to change.
The hallmarks of a great leader.
It was completely unambiguous whether or not it created jeopardy from him organizationally or tension from him organizationally. He was going to do the right thing. And that was when it's like, okay, this is what leadership looks like.
Why values are the true bottom line.
You know, when you look at different companies who are competing, eventually they always arrive at a moment where there's equal access to capital. And so then what differentiates these companies over time? It is people and culture.
Lesson one, embrace the change. I think looking back into Wrigley, the company that you joined, you said you'd been there a year, and the company that I met at the start of this, it was very much, I saw it as seeing itself as a multinational company, not a global company, a multinational company. And that changed dramatically over those years. And I think that was part of the success to transition it from a American company with international units to a truly global company.
Yeah, I believe that was exactly what the intentionality was, and there was a great success there. And I think there were many things that Wrigley had done that were pioneering, even in the moment where we were requiring to transition. I think, for example, Wrigley as an American company very much pioneered using local talent to build the companies in the different parts of the world, and it gave it a great advantage. And I think that foundation of entrepreneurship and trust that it had in people, even if they were of a different culture and from a different part of the world, was why it became such a valuable company later on with Mars. And it was a great time to be part of something that was transformational also for me personally, in learning how to be a leader and how to be someone who participates in organizational change.
So, Paul, can you tell us a couple of things about that? What were the standouts in terms of your journey?
One of the things that I felt was important in that time, and there were people who were subject matter experts who were part of the older company, and they had big contributions to make, but you had this vibe of the transition, and you had a lot of new people coming in. I came in, you know, my bosses were new to the organization. And so there were a bunch of people that if you didn't make the effort to have them feel included, even though you were the new person, you could have lost a lot of the expertise that built Wrigley to what it was at that time, which was still, you know, from the beginning, a very successful, amazing company. And so I felt like it was very important to include, but also pay respect to the people who had been there that really knew the business, and make sure that you spent the effort to learn from them and acknowledge what they knew. And for me, that was a big part of the learning. I think the other one was, I think that was also a time just in business where transition and change accelerated. Things don't stay the same. Things always change. And you have to have that resilience to deal with change if you're going to be successful. We were in a big moment of cultural transformation. And we were on a journey. People did not know where it would end. We knew we had this aspiration. We didn't know how we were going to get there, which was to make our $2 billion company a $5 billion company in like 5 years' time. And though everyone thought, well, that's kind of crazy, you know, more than double the company. It took us 100 years to get to two, and we're going to get to five in 5 years, you know. So there was a bit of stretch of your imagination, but people went with it. And like you're saying, there was some resistance, but that fell away. And the people who could not change obviously then had to move along. But we were able to take that journey and be quite successful because of the preparation to deal with change, and the preparation to deal with transformation, and the preparation to be resilient, to go on a journey that you may not know where it's going. But just to accept that you're on a journey that will end up somewhere positive.
So, Paul, I'm interested at the use of your word resilience there, because this has been a key theme throughout, not just the podcast, but for the last 18, 19 months. Every single conversation I have with someone from our community or a client or even friends and colleagues, the word resilience is just the thing that's front and center. What are some of the tips that you could give to an organization who's about to go through an extraordinary transformation like that, or maybe it's a smaller transformation that will help them to really build their resilience, but more importantly, build the resilience of their team?
Well, I think one of the things that happens in a mindset at an organization that has a resistance to change is that people will feel like the status quo is great or acceptable, instead of understanding that the status quo is something that has to move, it has to evolve, it has to change. My suggestion and advice to leaders in organizations is to always set the expectation that change is positive and that you have to evolve. And that as a leader, you have to make sure that you're creating the trust relationship with the people, taking them on a journey that is positive. And how you do that is making sure that you're thinking enough ahead that you're not creating these huge disruptive events, layoff events that are then looked at with skepticism on an organization in terms of taking you on a positive journey of growth for a company. Set the expectation of constant change. Set the expectation of transformation and evolution.
That was fantastic. I mean, Paul reflected so accurately on the experience that we certainly have when we first enter an organization that's about to embark on any kind of transformation. We see the resistance, the fear, and the belief that the status quo is good.
Yes, and I remember with Paul and with Wrigley, remember it was a legacy company, and Paul mentioned the old guard. There were a lot of people there who had been there for a long time. So one of the things that I saw over the first few days that we worked with them in the program is, looking at mindsets, there were only a very small proportion of people in that group of 50 of the most senior managers. There were only a handful of people who had a mindset of 5 years into the future. And then there was another small group that had a mindset that was in the current reality. And then the majority of people, their mindset was basically in the past. And one of the initial challenges was actually to get people to shift their mindset and shift their belief systems about what Wrigley could be rather than what they believed Wrigley was. Let's hear more from Paul. Lesson two, great leaders build great teams. Going back to talent, one story I heard was that it was difficult to get people to come to Wrigley, particularly the people they wanted. But as the cultural journey went, some of the headhunters were calling in and saying, what's happened to Wrigley? Because we've got people now wanting to come to Wrigley.
Well, I think the point I would say is to build on what you're saying. This goes back to leadership. When I interviewed at Wrigley, I interviewed with a gentleman named Gary McCullough. And Gary was sharing the story. You know, I had gone through the interview process, but part of it also, I think, toward it was part of him selling me on the opportunity. And you had to go on faith. You had to go on the faith that this person as a leader was going to transform the organization and make it different than maybe what the reputation was. You had to go on that faith. And I believed him. So you went on faith based on the quality of the leader and the values and the convictions that he expressed about what was wanted and where that business was going to go. And that's also true about Ferrero. You know, Ferrero's reputation in the United States was non-existent. And being open, there was a bit of skepticism until I met Mr. Ferrero. And in the interview with Mr. Ferrero, I got this big sense that what I had heard, though, about the company in terms of it having a moral compass and being very caring and concerned about the employees was very true. And I went on the faith of interacting with him that here was someone who was leading this business grounded in ethics and grounded in integrity, that they were going to take it in the right direction and that he was going to take it in the right direction. So for me, two big moments that have been important in my career journey were based on faith in the leader and where that leader would take it.
So Paul, thinking about leadership a bit more, and I'd like you to think right back now, maybe to your very first inspirational leader. Maybe it was a sports coach, maybe it was a teacher at school, maybe it was a parent, but who was the person that you can really cast your mind back and remember had that first dramatic impact on you where you thought, wow, that's a really inspirational leader? And what were the qualities that stuck out for you?
Well, I'll answer it personally, and then I'll answer it professionally, because there are two. So when I was in school, I went to a high school in Chicago named St. Ignatius, a Jesuit school, and very much around educating people in the Jesuit tradition. And I had a philosophy teacher who was incredibly challenging. And his name was Brother McCabe. He passed away. But I remember, you know, the very first assignment, because it stuck with me to this day, because I thought the guy was crazy. And his first assignment was compare and contrast Aristotelian metaphysics with Platonic epistemology. And, you know, I'm a sophomore. I'm like, what is this? So I had to read this stuff. I'm sure I made up a bunch of nonsense and turned it in. But I remember that stuck with me to this point, because it was a shock in that there was this expectation of me having to portray back my understanding of some really, really deep topics. And then I just remember, and I'll never forget this, I was in his class and he called on me and he asked me a question and I could not define it. I said, I know what it is, and this is this. And I remember he said, if you cannot define it, you do not know it. And I just remember that, you know, I was probably 14 years old, you know, so it's 40 years ago. And I remember him saying that to me, and it always stuck with me. And I think that really set a foundation for any intellectual pursuit I have been on since. You know, I pay a lot of homage to that kind of thinking that he drove, that expectation of not taking things at a superficial level, to making sure you truly comprehend and understand something and using that as the basis of your intellectual understanding. But then professionally, I have to say the first true leader, inspirational leader I met in my business life was Gary McCullough. And I think the thing that I will say, and I met good people, but Gary was somebody that I would say immediately you understood that he was set by a conviction that had integrity and a moral compass, and he would fight to do the right thing. And he knew the difference between right or wrong, whether or not it created jeopardy from him organizationally or tension from him organizationally, he was going to do the right thing. It was completely unambiguous. And that was when it's like, okay, this is what leadership looks like. I hadn't seen it before, but that's what a leader does.
Having faith in a leader is so important, and we know from our programs that those with the highest level of success are always led from the front. It's why we found a bottom-up approach can struggle. You need that inspirational and well-directed leadership and leaders as role models.
Absolutely, Zana. And belief is so important. So for those leaders out there listening now, the people that follow you need to believe in a number of things. They need to believe in your vision. They also need to believe that you believe that vision is possible. And they need to believe that you believe that they can do it. So those different levels of belief are all wrapped up in belief in your leadership. That's how important belief is.
For sure. And you can't get a better example than Gary. To hear more about Gary's leadership principles, you can listen to our podcast interview with him that was done earlier in this series. Okay, Bart, what's next?
Lesson 3, business as a force for good. Business now is probably the most influential force on the planet. You know, my belief is that it can either be a force for good or not so good. And 28 years ago, I came out of the corporate world, and I could see that this influence of business was getting more and more and more. But what I saw also was, if you think, the consciousness of business was lagging behind its effect. So it was affecting lots of people. It was starting to affect the planet in a big way. But the consciousness of business leadership was way behind its effect. What are your views on this and on how business can be a force for good or not so good?
Well, I think for me, the first point is looking at where does it begin? And I think it starts for most of us in that your identity as a person is driven by what you do for your living. And I think that that is something that you have to respect in dealing with people and dealing with organizations and dealing with yourself, and that you get your pride very often. And maybe this is positive and maybe this is negative, but it's a reality. You get a lot of your pride from what you do. That pride is based upon also a lot of where an organization is going. Employees are expecting more from the companies that they work for. And I also believe our consumers are expecting more from the companies they buy from. As you're saying, there's been this kind of opening of the mind in that, hey, I want to work for somebody that my values are aligned with. And this is why I think organizations are evolving. If you want the best people and you want to be successful, you have to be doing things that are perceived and are actually good for your organization and good for the community, the society, environment as a business. You know, when you think about even the beginning of Wrigley, you know, Wrigley had set up businesses in East Europe. And so me as an American, I was able to have relationships with people that I would never have had a relationship with and that are friends with me today. So what's always been an interesting concept for me is that business organizations, global business organizations, create camaraderie among potentially people that would be in countries that could be adversarial. And so that then starts to break down. Wait a minute, that's a person just like me. They have a family, they have children, they want better for their community, they want better for their country, they want better for the planet, just like I do. When you think about globalization, it's globalization of relationships. And I think it's a positive thing.
I couldn't agree more. And it brings me back to a program we did a few years ago when they just had the most recent revolution in Ukraine. And my husband's from Ukraine, so we follow all of that very closely. And we were doing a program in Kiev, but with a Russian and a Ukrainian team. And we'd been kind of nervous going in, like, is there going to be some disputes here? Are people going to be frustrated with each other? Is this maybe going to bubble up to the surface over the course of the program? And of course, absolutely not, because they were work colleagues and everybody knows each other's families. Everybody got on incredibly well. And it was just the most inspirational experience for me to see that, you know, so much of this stuff is caused by politics and actually human beings, as we well know from running the program in so many different countries. At the end of the day, Paul, is what you just said is so true. You know, we all have families, we all care about the same stuff. And there's a lot more that unites us than that which divides us.
They ended up with their arms around each other singing, didn't they?
Yeah.
Incredible.
This is where business can be transformational, because it's that trust relationship that comes from business and people getting to know one another as real people that can step change transformation.
So I think that will be easy for our listeners to get behind. And, you know, as Bart and I said, we completely can see that side of it and have experienced it for ourselves. And it's something really wonderful. I think where many people get confused about the negative aspects is when we look at problems with sustainability or problems with greed. How do you think that the corporate world is starting to address that now? Because for a long time, you'd just have a little tab on your page, wouldn't you, about sustainability, and it didn't really mean very much. But these days, as you were saying before, with consumers really demanding more from companies, it has to mean something, right?
Well, I think that companies, again, from their associates and consumers, are becoming aware of the impacts that we make on our environment. There's a new market force, not just supply and demand, that influences whether a business is successful. You know, you use that word sustainable. I think people also are smart. People understand that if you want to make money in the long term, you can't destroy the environment you're in. And if you're going to have a successful business, you can't destroy the sources of your ingredients or materials or everything else that you consume in the production of your business. So I just think that the mindset is changing. And I think that comes from us becoming more aware.
That's a great point, Paul. And I like the word you used earlier, which was, it's an evolution. There's evolution going on in the natural world, and that's probably much slower, but there's an evolution going on in our mindset. And that mindset has shifted from early days of capitalism, where everything was just, let's exploit what we can, through our generation, which started to look at sustainability. And I think the next generation will be starting to look at, well, let's go beyond sustainability. How can we regenerate? That's already happening. And I think one of the key factors as well is the generational factor. But each generation, to me, seems to be much smarter, much more aware, and they put their choices behind their values and what they think is good for the planet and good for humanity.
Yeah, absolutely. We see it because we see it in the way that our associates convey their expectations on us as an organization. And then when you look at where business is today in terms of the search for talent, and this is very much a global dilemma we're in. There is a shortage of talent in the marketplace. As an associate, you have choices. You can choose, do you want to work for company A or company B? And so, you know, to use your context of evolution, natural selection will play a role. If your company cannot attract top talent because its values are out of step with where your potential associates are, you're not going to make it. And if you go back into our finance days, you know, and you go into finance theory, one of the things that's always said about capital markets is that eventually, you know, when you look at different companies who are competing, eventually they always arrive at a moment where there's equal access to capital. And so then what differentiates these companies over time? It is people and culture. And it's the culture that transforms them and makes them more competitive or less competitive to the other company that's their size, has the same access to capital. And that was why, going back to the beginning of our conversation this morning, why this whole discussion around Wrigley, that transformation of culture was the platform that enabled it to be successful.
I'd like to add something more about this idea of the consciousness of business, because that's moved so much in recent years. In a way, if I think about breakthrough, there was a type of spiritual vision behind Breakthrough, as well as a company vision. And the spiritual vision was to help leaders and help organizations and people who work in organizations have the tools that would enable them to raise their consciousness so that whatever they're doing, whatever business that they're in, that they're doing more than just growing the business. They're actually doing more than that. They're growing themselves. They're growing their families. They're growing the people around them. And the idea that that raising of consciousness would eventually create leaders who would then be much more responsible in the businesses that they manage and they create, so that business does become a force for good for everybody. That was actually at the heart of Breakthrough from the moment we started it.
And that's so inspirational. I think it ties in incredibly well to where we are today. And I remember a CEO who's worked with us many, many times, we'd sort of lost a little bit of sight of that, hadn't we, at one point? And he said, hey, you need to bring back one of your taglines, which is the spirit of Breakthrough creates new futures. And so we started to use that again more and more. And I think it sums up exactly what you're saying in that idea of raising the consciousness and that kind of intangible spirit that is Breakthrough. Now, onto our hot seat. This is the part of the show at the end of each episode where we ask our guests quickfire questions to learn more about their views on life, what's important to them, and to learn about their habits for high performance. So, Paul, first up, what brings you energy and motivation in your everyday life?
Well, I'd like to see impacts. You know, for me, one of the great things that comes from being in the positions that I've had, either in marketing or in general management, is that you can see the product and result of your effort, and that motivates you. You know, it gives you a reason to get out, and that, hey, I'm going to get out of bed today and I'm going to make a difference, and I'm seeing the difference I'm creating and the results that come. And that for me is very motivating.
Finish this sentence. Success is?
Never a straight line.
I like that. I like that. And then finally, what inspires you in life?
I think my inspiration comes from being optimistic. Why be pessimistic? I'm optimistic, and I think that the days ahead will always be better. We just got to keep on our track and remember. And I think people of good conscience everywhere around the world will drive us that direction naturally. That's where it will go.
We've got a wide range of listeners on this podcast. Our community, and you know, from CEOs like you through to people who are just starting their career. And if we think about the people that are just starting their career, what advice would you give them from your point of view on your journey, a very successful journey with its ups and downs, but what advice would you give to the ones that are starting out?
Well, I share this with people quite often. I think the first bit of advice I would give to anyone that is starting out is to be curious. And hopefully it's you're innately curious, because I think it's that curiosity that is going to open up many doors for you because of the questions you ask and the investigation you do in terms of getting to a better understanding of the business you're in, the processes you're in, the people around you, the culture you're in. And I think that is especially important for you to be successful. You have to be curious. And so that would be my first bit of advice. The second one would be to make sure that you build your capability and creativity. Solutions to business and solutions in your personal life often are built, the best ones are built on you coming up with creative solutions to the problems. And creativity, really, if you think about all of the great business leaders, they've had some gift of creativity that they've deployed in running or building their business. And I think the other one is always carry an entrepreneurial mindset. And that to me is the foundation of what eventually it is to be a senior executive like a CEO. Because when you're an entrepreneur and you're starting out, you're responsible for everything. You've got to find out how to get it made. You got to find the people to make it. You got to pay the light bill. You got to make sure you're handling the tax. You got to handle the recruiting. your every function wrapped in one when you're the entrepreneur. With that entrepreneurial mindset, carry forward also the humbleness to learn from everyone you're working with. Because you may learn something today that 30 years from now, you can use in a meeting or a conversation on a business problem that you have. Like, wait a minute, I remember this. These things can express themselves to opportunities later on.
Fantastic. Great. Thank you, Paul. Paul, our listeners may want to ask you a question or get in touch with you or just find out a bit more about you. What's a good way for them to do that? Would that be through social media? Should they get in touch with us and we pass it on to you? What's the best thing?
I would say the best way is to send me an in message on LinkedIn.
Perfect.
I'm very easy to find there, and you can send me a note and I'll do my best to respond in a timely manner.
Well, they'll be very grateful for that. And I know that we certainly are. Paul, it's been an absolute pleasure today. Thank you so much for your generosity of time and generosity of advice. I know that our listeners will be really, really excited to listen to this podcast. Thank you for joining us for today's three lessons. Do make sure you hit the subscribe button and join us next time for another three lessons from Breakthrough Leaders. And you can reach out to us at Breakthrough Global on LinkedIn or Facebook, or via Twitter at Radiant Clarity, or on Instagram at Global Breakthrough.
And we'd love to hear from you, your feedback and your own leadership stories. We'd also love for you to share this episode on your own social media and review and rate this podcast on your player of choice, as we want to spread these transformative lessons as widely as possible.
And finally, a huge thanks to our production team, Yulia Sheltisova at Breakthrough Global and Robin Leeburn at Fairly Media. And of course, thank you for listening. See you next time.